So I'd like to a little bit address this one line that I threw out yesterday. The way out is the way in. Many of us feel we want a way out, or at least we don't want so much difficulty going on all around us. We want a way out. We want, in a way, something better. We want Gan Eden, Garden of Eden. And we feel a little bit in exile. And this is all human beings. And probably, if you ask the kind of the beetles and the ants crawling along, do you want to find your Garden of Eden, Gan Eden, they will say, oh yeah, I'm looking for it all the time. Something in us wants to stop, or should we say wants it to stop, and we feel a little bit like a hamster in a wheel, going round and round, or ger in Hebrew. I was giving teachings a few days ago in my daughter's house, and there was a hamster in the room. There was just me and the hamster, and the Zoom, and all people, don't know where they are, you know, in Holland and many in Israel, just heard this hamster going around and around. Beautiful teaching, didn't need me. They just listened to the hamster. The whole world is there. Because we do feel like that in our life so much. And not all the time, but of course we just feel that somehow we want to get off the wheel. One of my favorite examples of that is Winnie the Pooh, when he was climbing up the tree to get honey, and a branch broke. And he was a bit overweight, obese, I think, Pooh. And the branch broke, and he dropped down to the next one, and the next branch broke, and he went down to the next one. And boom, 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 branch to branch falling down from the tree and eventually getting to the earth with a big bang and getting in a pile of kotsim, of thistles. And he looked and he said, it's all because I like honey so much. So I think we're a bit like that. And we want to stop. But we don't really want to stop activity. We don't want to stop flowering. We don't want to stop making babies. We don't want to stop creating, dancing, playing in our life. It's not activity that we want to stop, but it's activity that feels driven by pressure, by habits, by stress. We want to win back control of our activity instead of being out of control. We feel sometimes like a bus that's running downhill without any driver in it. And it's just the community, the society, the chevra, the society, and ourselves, part. And so it's not activity that we want to stop, it's the compulsion, the pressure, the sense of having to keep going and having to do things automatically because of reasons. And sometimes it feels meaningless. It's all right to feel like that, but it's unpleasant to feel that, what am I doing this for? And I'm sure there's not one person here in this room that hasn't been asking that from the age of 3 years old. What am I doing? What are they doing all that for? What's the meaning behind it? I remember having a terrifying experience at that age, about 5 or 6, meeting death, and someone came to my house, a visitor, and heard me crying, and she said, it's all right, when you're an adult, you'll be okay with it all. So I carried on crying, but I changed the language. I said, I don't want to be an adult. I don't want to be an adult. So there's a pressure there that something is missing. We want to stop. We want to stop being after something else that is better. We want to be able to let go of this pressure that something is better there, then, tomorrow, beyond. Small piece from a poem here. We always hope someone else has the answer. Some other place will be better. Some other time it will all turn out okay. But this is it. No one else has the answer. And no other place will be better. And it's already all turned out as it is. At the center of your being, you have the answer. You know who you are. There's no need to run outside to see things better. We begin to understand that we want to stop the way we feel life as this hamster, the ogre in the wheel. But it's sometimes really, really difficult. I wonder how many of you, us, how we felt when we had to give in our telephones at the beginning of this retreat. Some of you may be a great relief. Oh, thank goodness someone can tell me. I don't have to do it myself. There's someone there that says, give me your telephone. Oh, great, I can do it. Because it's really hard. I see my grandchildren. It's the default place. When there's a bit of absence, space, something missing, whoop, straight in the telephone. So they're very strong. The habit, the compulsions are very strong. And we want to stop. So we come on retreat. And retreat is the first step. Stopping externally, creating conditions which are helpful, such as, give me your telephone. The condition external. And they really do help. That's why we come to a retreat. Because it's not easy to break these habits that keep going around and around and around for years and are supported by society and the community. So there's something beautiful that is possible, which we can change the conditions, like coming on a retreat, and the energies change and something changes. What's the energies between all of us here? It's radically different from the street. It's very, very different. And it's possible. It shows us what's possible. that we can be here together for a few days with kindness, with attention, with quietness. You know, 100 Israelis in a room, quiet. Wow. I was talking about this with my family the other day, and I heard that in the parasha that there was a whole story about why the children of Israel, when they left Egypt, they needed 40 years to get to their supposed Gan Eden. Why couldn't they just take a bus? You know, a fast bus from Egypt to Tel Aviv. What's all this 40 years business? It's only down the road. It's not far. We can do it in a few hours. Why do they need 40 years? And the answer is 40 years of purification, of being in the Midbar, which is in place traditionally seen as empty, as not, as giving up your telephones and giving up everything and just coming back to nature, which you can't control, and being more in the real world of conscious, I am exposed and vulnerable to the desert, and it needs time, generations in this case, to actually purify a deep pattern of slavery. And it's a good story. It feels an important story. Slavery is really, really deep, and we feel that to our telephones and to our struggles and to the habits that we've built. And so we had lots of that kind of experiences in Klil. I remember arriving in Klil and deciding that I will clean a field of 10 dunams, 2.5 acres, of stones by hand, plant wheat every year, harvest the wheat, grind the wheat with a grinder like this one of those that grinds the wheat, and make bread every morning. Can you believe what a crazy idea? I could have gone to the supermarket and get great bread. 5 minutes. It's crazy. But it feels a little bit like the children of Israel needing 40 years to get down the road. And I did it 15 years. I grew wheat every year, and more or less by hand, sowing the wheat, harvesting it, and getting sacks of flour and grinding it in the house with a hand grinder. We had no electricity. And baking bread every morning, and it was the most beautiful experience. And really going back to the Midbar, to the zero place. And I'm coming with a doctorate in molecular biology to that place. Sort of, okay, drop all that stuff and go back to simplicity, to the Midbar. So this is a condition, it's like going on retreat, and it's really valuable that we can do it. And we are doing it. And something shifts completely. We're not in the same place anymore. And it's important that we see that. And we can be here. And one of the most important lessons of this retreat is we can live differently. That we didn't think that we could, but we can. We can go beyond what we think is possible, even as a community of 90 people. And what's also possible is to sit quietly for 45 minutes. It's not so easy, but we're doing it every day, many times maybe. And that's a condition for, it's setting a condition where things can change. Nevertheless, changing the situation is not enough. We need to change the way we look at our experience. We need to change the eyes with which we look at life, not just to change the conditions of life. So here, stopping is in order to see. We stop, we sit, we get quiet, we stop talking, chatting, television screens, running about, restlessness, in order to see. One of the things we need to see, and the first thing we see, and all of you have expressed it in the grooves, and all of us know this, the first thing we see is actually what disturbs. We begin to see what is the noise. We begin to see what disturbs us. We begin to see what's missing. It should be like this. I don't feel at peace. My mind is going crazy. My body is hurting. My back is hurting. That's what we see. I'm bored. Few people reported in the groups, boredom, shi'imum. And we can't pick up telephone. My grandchildren, very often, sham emli. And sometimes I have the kind of cheek to say, first of all, that means I want the telephone or the screen. It's not Mishar Memli, it's I want that. But the second thing is, isn't that the most interesting thing that's happening right now? Mishar Memli, I'm bored. Can we look at it with new eyes? Isn't that the most interesting message we're getting? Boredom is not boring. So we stop in order to see. We stop on the road in order to look at the map. We stop on our journey so that we can see where we are, where we've come from, what's going on around us, what the road look like. And this is the word that we used before, samadhi. Samadhi means to collect ourselves, to gather ourselves, to have a steady eye, to look into where we are. It's to gather ourselves in order to look, in order to see. And it is, in a sense, stopping, slowing down. The traditional images of the wild elephant that is doing crazy things and very destructive, it's the mind. And slowly, slowly we're gathering, we're quietening the elephant. And when we slow down, when we stop, like we did in the walking meditation, something, the view changes. We basically, put it like this, we mostly live by summary, sikumim. What I need, what I want, what I don't like, what's missing, what has to happen. I'm like this, I need to be there. These are kind of summaries of our plate, of where we are, of what we're doing. But stopping, walking, slowing down, walking step by step, allows the lens, adasha, to be in different focus. And then, instead of the constant summary, what I need, where I am, what's missing, where I have to go, what I have to do, we focus the lens on what is really happening right now. And one step can do that. We are one step, a moment of existence. If we're running, we won't know that. We slow down, we stop, we sit 45 minutes, we walk slowly in order to open and change the lens instead of all the time this summaries, sikumim. And we begin to see things more closely. Here in this retreat, not so easy. It's cold. We're wearing masks most of the time. We need the air conditioning, and maybe you were cold at night. At least I was. So it's not necessarily so easy. But it's our chance to change the lens and look at that. What is our expectations? What is it when I am disturbed by something? What is actually happening? What is boredom? What is resistance? What is disturbance? Who is disturbed? Is that automatic? What is the experience of disturbance in the microscope of one step or one breath? How does it work? Where does it come from? Where is it going? What's the source of this voice in me saying, I am disturbed? And also the opposite voice, I am joyful. I'm feels lovely. What is that? Let's look at that. Let's open that. We do this with the body because the body is the easiest place to start with. We actually can't be just with the body. The mind takes over the show. Whatever we do, the movie keeps playing. So the mind is there as well. But the body is a useful place, like a window or a ma'abada, a laboratory, where we can experience what's it like to change the lens, to stop and look more carefully, look more closely. We see that it's not really in our hands. There's a lot that is not in our hands. Here we are, minding our own business, not hurting anybody, quiet, and boredom comes. Why? What? Where does that come from? It's a visitor, boredom, or resistance. Where does it? Why does it need to be there? We know. We learn it with the body. We learn that a lot of the issues are around the need to control things, the need for things to be a certain way. If we look more carefully with that lens in the laboratory, ma'abada, of the body, we'll discover that we have a strong need for things to be a certain way. Like this is okay, like if it's not like that, it's not okay. This is okay, this is not okay. And our crazy mind jumps in and begins to make a meal out of this. It's not okay because it should be okay. It's okay for the guy next to me, is a Buddha sitting next to me in total peace. Why the hell am I feeling bored and cold? And the mind jumps in and begins to make a meal out of all of this. Commenting, again, summaries. I'm like that. So the body is a place where we can begin to learn samadhi and learn to look more carefully and step out of the movie. Step back from the whole picture. A little bit be the witness or the audience. The edut. And what happens then is we see the way we receive the world. We dive into the breath, and then what happens? Oh, it doesn't work. Oh, it's this. Oh, I would be much better at this if my back didn't hurt. I would be if it was a bit different like that or like that. It starts. If we just sit steady and open and ready, we will see what's driving us, what's driving us to be like the hamster in the... We will begin to open. The lens is not just showing us the sources of our difficulties, and it's also showing us what is this being, what is this body, what's it saying, what's the poems that it's telling me, what are the songs that are being written in the heart, in the mind, in the cells of the tissues, what is this, there's a magical kingdom here in this body, and we kind of forgot it because we're always in the world of summaries, sikumim, there's this and there's this, but there's a whole kingdom we don't notice. And if we stop and dive into what's really happening, it opens doors, it opens worlds, and it really is. We really discover that we're a huge being, a mystery, but a huge being. We're not a small person at all. We're made of the world. We are the world. And we discover that by opening the window. Things get interesting. It gets interesting if we can or we cannot have this experience. Still gets interesting. And slowly, slowly, what arises is kachaze. That's the way it is. That's not a negative thing. It means we are close to a genuine meeting with things as they are. That's the way they are right now. Tara Brach wrote a book called Radical Acceptance. And it's that kind of sense. If we release the kind of energy that we put into control, we meet life as it is, as it arises. There's a lot of freedom in that. Instead of pressure to keep controlling things, there's a lot of freedom. And it feels a little bit like acceptance. It's not quite acceptance. It's meeting things the way they arise. Our capacity to meet things in the way they arise. And this is a great help in changing our life and changing our society. But I won't go into that right now. Instead of the pressure to control, we are ready to meet things as they are. And from there we act, from there we change, from there we see. That's our starting point. So what happens, the way out is the way in, it's closeness. It's getting under the surface. And I invite you all in these few days to really get under the surface. Boredom happens. Go under the surface. What is that voice? What's the song that's being... What's the tune? What's the song that's being sung? What's the story? Go under the surface. Go under the surface of the body and what it's telling us, the aliveness in the body, in the hands, in the breath, in the legs, in the... I said this before, but I'll mention it again. I once met a 101-year-old Cambodian monk, and this was in America, and someone asked him, "What's your practice?" He said, "Well, every day I go on a kind of journey through the body, and every little bit of the body, I ask, how are you this morning? And this bit of the body says, I'm happy. Right ear, how are you? I'm happy. Getting under the surface, getting close, listening to our body-mind, seeing what it's like, this lived moment. What is my life? What is happening? What is happening to the body? What's happening to the mind? What's the stories? What's the movie? What is disturbance? When we do that, we'll also open unexpected places. If we really know disturbance, we will also know non-disturbance. If we really know cold, we'll know warmth. When we were outside today, I just was remembering, and we were looking for the sun, right? We were sort of hunting for a sunny spot, and then the clouds came, oh, and then the sun came, ah, and the clouds came, oh. But it reminds me of a very old film, something about Milano. Nespa Milano, yeah. And it was just such a lovely scene that a friend of mine showed me. A whole crowd of group of people in freezing weather, they were in a kind of plaza or an open space, and they would, like this, it was really cold, and they were not in the shade, and then they saw, someone said, there's sun over there. So they all ran to the sun, and then and then the sun disappeared, and the sun was over there. So they all ran over there. And I really felt this picture of duality. When we know noise, we also know silence. When we know disturbance, we also know non-disturbance. When we know of a word, if we look at a word, non-word, silence. If we know what's between things, a breath, in-breath, out-breath, and between, a thought arises and goes, and another thought arises, what's between? It opens doors. It opens possibilities. It opens a sense of existential living or truth of things. And it's not really in our hands. And it may be a place there which is we don't like to know about, but there's something there that actually is a relief. Like we're not in control of the sun to telling the sun where it should be and where the clouds should be. We're not really in control of pleasant, unpleasant. We can't design our experience here. We can say, well, that's really a problem. It makes me suffer more. Just look at that. Does it really? I guess every insect, every animal here is wanting this and not that, wanting to control it, it's better, it's not, it's better for me like that, it's something's missing, I have to go there. They're in the Buddhist language, the worldly winds, they are not ours, we can't control, we're not in control. We can control to some extent, or we can change things to some extent, but there's a certain wisdom there of not pressure to control, which is a lot of our suffering and difficulty comes from the pressure to control, non-stop. And the worldly winds come and it becomes cold or it becomes hot or it becomes a bit painful or we get bored or we get a bit pissed off and we don't exactly know why. And then we blame ourselves. We don't need to blame ourselves. It's just worldly winds. The winds come and we feel... Oh, I want this. Oh, I'm bored. Oh, I'm... Just being born. That's it. And that wasn't our fault, by the way. We weren't in control of that, and we're not in control of any of it. But what it does help us is a little bit of compassion. If we understand the worldly winds, that we didn't ask to be born, and we didn't ask, we just get the winds because we're born in a body. There's something there that does lead to compassion. The ants, the same. We feel the ants want things better. They can't help it. We, the same. When I come in the morning to feed my chickens, and they get so excited. What's in the pot? What's in the bucket? What surprises? What's happening? Like us with the lunch. What's for lunch today? I see them all going like this. What's for lunch today? They're so sweet. But I can see them suffering from this, as human beings. I want this better. Oh, it's not so good. Oh, we wanted something else. Oh, we expected juicy cabbage leaves, and all you've got to give us is used leaves of marva or something else, or grasses. Where is the cabbage that we had yesterday? I can read their minds. They're the same as us. The brain, the mind, is responding to this situation of non-control by working really hard to build models of the world that make sense, that we can feel we know the world. Okay, without that we couldn't drive a car, and I couldn't talk now, and you couldn't understand language. Of course we need a mind that is building a world. But in the Dharma, in the, I would say, spiritual practice, maybe not just Buddhist spiritual practice, but any spiritual practice, the question is how much space in the mind is taken up by the pressure that neurologists call predictive processing, building a world that makes sense and is convenient for me from the senses. What's coming through the senses, we build a model of the world which is convenient, which helps survival, which is fine. Except what we're learning in even just simply stopping to look at this and see, maybe it doesn't need to take up 99% of our consciousness. Maybe we can move, 5% of our consciousness is not in that place of building a world that we need. 10%, 15%, gradually opening more space, more, something more endless, something more unlimited. And slowly it happens through meditation and other spiritual practice. We're not against predictive processing, but we don't need to be totally under it. The way we build a world that makes sense doesn't need to be, or that's good for us, doesn't need to be 100% of the consciousness. We more and more find their spaces and more freedom and more soul, and we connect with the sources of that. The ground of that is just awareness, just being, allowing this life, meeting this life as it is, existential awareness, holding all of us. Okay, I think I'll stop at that point. So let's have a couple of minutes of quiet.